Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Over 40% of adults in the United States report feeling lonely. Now, loneliness is hard to quantify, but it seems to be pretty clear that feelings of loneliness and isolation are increasingly common. And while that sounds sad, it can also be seen as a serious health crisis. Raising awareness about and combating loneliness has become a focus for former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. He is with me this hour. Dr. Murthy, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Charity. It's good to be on with you.
Now, tell me why this has become a focus for you. What have you seen that made you think that this is something you need to be speaking out about right now?
Well, I think that loneliness has become a very important topic for us to be aware of and to address in America and actually around the world. When I was practicing medicine up in Boston, the greatest pathology that I saw, greatest illness, if you will, was not actually heart disease or diabetes. It was loneliness. And on the road, as I was Surgeon General visiting communities all across America, I found that many people felt profoundly isolated in their struggles with obesity, addiction, mental illness, economic uncertainty. And even those who were not living with illness described feeling alone. I realized that many people in our country feel invisible. I also realized that there's great power in truly seeing people for who they are, being witnesses to their journey, but many people don't have such relationships in your life. And finally, when I started to look more closely at the data, and I realized that science actually tells us a lot about loneliness. It tells us that it is far more prevalent and common than we thought, but it also tells us that loneliness is connected to many illnesses that we care about, including heart disease, anxiety, depression, and dementia. And it's also associated with shorter lifespans. That's why I think it's important for us to think about loneliness, to think about ways that we can address it, and to realize that loneliness is connected to our emotional well-being. And our emotional well-being is connected to many of the front page issues that we are reading about in the papers, whether it's the opioid epidemic or violence.
Well, and you talk about seeing that loneliness was a thread that ran through the lives of many of your patients that you saw as a doctor. Now, of course, these patients weren't coming to you to say, "Doctor, I don't feel good. I'm lonely." So how did you see this as a thread amongst your patients?
Well, that's really interesting that you ask, because you hit upon a really interesting point, which is that nobody comes to the doctor or very often comes to anyone in their life and proclaims that they are lonely. We just don't talk about loneliness very much. And part of that reason is because there is a stigma associated with being lonely. When I was a kid, I actually felt this stigma because I grew up being very lonely myself. And I was very shy. I had a hard time making friends as a child. And even though I had really strong relationships with my mother and my father and my sister, I felt quite lonely outside the home. Now, I never told my parents that. In fact, to this day, I have not told my parents. If they're, in fact, listening to this radio broadcast, they might find this out. But I never told them because I was ashamed, and I thought that if I was lonely, that meant that I was not worthy of being loved. And that's what many people who are lonely find. But I recognize this was a challenge with my patients because I was able to spend time talking to them and building trusted relationships with them. And over time, this is what came out. And I recognize that loneliness is a very, very common feeling that people have, but not one that many people are comfortable talking about.
Well, and you mentioned it being associated with other health risks. I can imagine that for many people, having a health crisis is something that can lead to loneliness, but you weren't necessarily calling it a cause and effect type relationship, but something that seems to go hand in hand with health issues, whether loneliness leads or follows.
That's right. And loneliness has an interesting relationship to illness in that it can be both a result of chronic illness, in a sense, and loneliness may also lead to many of the illnesses that we know about and read about in the papers. There's a biological basis for this as well. You know, as human beings, we evolved to be social creatures. If you can imagine thousands of years ago what life was like for us, before we had technology or the comforts of modern living, Many lives were threatened, in fact, by predators, and not having a stable food source was a reason why many people died. But having a tight social network of people you could trust made it more likely that you could protect yourself from predators, that you could actually have a stable food supply. And over thousands of years, the need for social connection became baked into our nervous systems. So we were designed, we evolved to be social creatures. And when we are disconnected from each other, when we are feeling lonely, that actually places us in a physiologic stress state. And chronic stress, as we now know very well from very good research, increases our risk for a number of health conditions. It increases the inflammation in our body, and it puts us at greater risk for conditions like heart disease, like arthritis, obesity, and a host of other chronic diseases.
You also have written that there is a reduction in lifespan associated with loneliness that shows that the risk associated with loneliness is as great as, for example, smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So tell me more about that, what we know about how it actually impacts our health long term.
Well, that was some of the most striking data that has come about as the longevity data. And what is really interesting is that that loneliness seems to be associated with a significant reduction in lifespan, a reduction that's similar to the extent of reduction that you see with smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And it's even greater than the reduction lifespan that you see with obesity. Now, the exact mechanisms as to why are likely complicated, and this is part of the reason that we need more research and understanding of loneliness. But what it helps to underscore is that our emotional health and well-being has a far more profound impact on our physical well-being than many of us previously thought. And that's why it's so important that as we think about improving the health of people in Iowa and across the country and around the world, that we think not just about what we are doing for our physical health, but we also think how we are supporting and nourishing our emotional health and well-being. I say this explicitly because for far too many people, including myself, we grew up in cultures that said, you know, your emotional health and well-being is sort of your business. It's a reflection of how strong or in some cases weak you are. And if you're feeling lonely or if you're feeling like you're emotionally not in a good place, then you should just suck it up and deal with it. But that suck it up mentality or approach to our emotional health just frankly doesn't work for most people. And it's one of the reasons that I believe that we have seen a significant decrement in our emotional health and well-being. It's one of the reasons that I think it is now important for us to refocus on our emotional health as part and parcel of our overall health.
I'm talking with former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. We're talking about what he sees as a loneliness epidemic in our culture today. I want to bring another loneliness researcher into the conversation as well. Daniel Russell is with us. He's a professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. He's been studying loneliness throughout his career and, along with his wife and co-collaborator, developed a loneliness scale, which has helped many researchers understand the scope of this problem over the years. Daniel Russell, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And can you tell me a little bit about what started you on this path? What did you see that made you want to study loneliness?
Well, one of the reasons we started working in this area was trying to understand how people felt regarding their social network and feelings of loneliness related to, you know, finding their relationships to not be satisfactory and feeling socially isolated. And one of the things we discovered early on was related to the stigma of feeling lonely was that, you know, in developing the measure, part of what we did was not include the word loneliness in any of the questions, because we quickly found that, you know, there were feelings of related to the stigma that problems with social desirability in terms of admitting that one was feeling lonely.
Interesting. So can you help me define loneliness? I'd love to hear from both of you on this, because it does seem to be so related to so many other feelings and other parts of our life. But Daniel, how do you define loneliness?
Well, part of, you know, one of the basic definitions that's used in research on loneliness is that it reflects your relationships not meeting your expectations regarding the types of relationships you should have, how many relationships, the amount of social contact. and that if your relationships don't meet that expectation, then you're dissatisfied with your relationships and feeling lonely. And part of the point is drawing a distinction between feeling lonely and feeling socially isolated. That some people may feel lonely even though they have lots of relationships with others and lots of social contact. You know, there may be a deficit in, you know, so for example, they may have lots of friends, but if what they really want is, say, a romantic or dating relationship, say, with college students, then they may feel lonely. On the other hand, other people may, you know, be socially isolated, yet not feel lonely.
Interesting. Well, and do we also need to be careful not to equate loneliness and depression?
That's certainly been an issue. That is, there's a strong relationship between the two. And one of the symptoms associated with depression is loneliness. Now, research has indicated that they are different from one another. But in terms of evaluating research, you have to, you know, when you look at the consequences of loneliness, it may be that that's, you know, what you're seeing there, that association is due to the relationship between loneliness and depression. Clearly, loneliness can lead one to be depressed, and depression can lead one to become lonely.
All right, so it's kind of a similar relationship, just as Dr. Murthy was talking about, with heart disease and other illnesses, that loneliness and depression seems to have this relationship. Dr. Murthy, does that sound right to you?
Yes, what we see is that loneliness is a risk factor for many conditions. As the professor mentioned, you know, depression being one of those conditions. And I think what's also very striking about what was just said is that loneliness is a subjective state. And this is really important for us to understand in the modern day and age, because we sometimes equate loneliness with the number of friends that one has. But
right.
you can have one or two friends and not be lonely at all.
And we're going to have to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a moment and continue talking about loneliness with former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy and Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.
They're gone forever, so far apart, but only
support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about loneliness. With me, former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. He feels that we are in the midst of a loneliness epidemic in this country. Also, Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University, is here with us. He's been studying loneliness throughout his career. And I want to ask both of you, as you look at evidence, and, you know, Daniel, I know that your loneliness scale is used in a lot of surveys that give us information about loneliness. What group of people do you feel is most at risk? Where do you see loneliness increasing most dramatically right now? Daniel?
Well, I think that, you know, historically, and this is surprising to most people, the loneliest groups have been college students and high school students. Older adults, particularly what would be typically called the young old, say those between 65 and 84 years of age, have been the least lonely of adults. And, you know, in 2010, the AARP did a national survey using our measure, and that's what they found. But it's also true that research, you know, if you look at research on older adults over time, it appears that they're becoming more lonely. In other words, we're seeing what's commonly referred to as a cohort effect. That is, you know, new generations, as they become older, are reporting higher levels of loneliness than previous generations of older adults. And so that suggests that, you know, we may see increasing levels of loneliness in older adults. And With college students, there was a meta-analysis published a couple of years ago, which suggests that levels of loneliness among college students have been declining.
Interesting. And Dr. Murthy, what are your thoughts on this right now? I understand that you feel that many of us are at risk, maybe all of us are at risk, but is there a specific group that you're particularly concerned about?
Well, I do think it is interesting that if you look at the numbers, that many groups are in fact at risk, and our rates of loneliness in most age demographics are higher than any of us would expect. The group that I'm particularly concerned about, though, is young people. And while there may be some fluctuations in the data in that group, part of my concern is that our ability to sort of build a platform and a foundation for a productive and healthy life starts early in life. And it has been great concern to me when I have gone to colleges and high schools around our country and asked students about this topic, that many of them actually endorse feeling lonely, despite the incredible abundance of technology that they have to connect themselves to other people. So there is a disconnect, if you will, between the social technology that we have and the loneliness that young people are feeling. And if young people are feeling this early in their lives, then this can have very harmful impacts on their health. It can also impact their performance in school, as well as productivity in the workplace for young adults who are finishing their training and entering the workforce. So that's particularly why I'm concerned about young people. They are, in many ways, our future, the foundation that we need to invest in. The fact that so many of them are feeling lonely is of great concern to me.
Well, and do you feel like the technology is somehow responsible for that? I mean, obviously, we have these social networks. We can text each other constantly. We can be in constant contact with people. So it does seem counterintuitive that loneliness would be rising. Do you feel like the technology has something to do with loneliness levels rising?
Well, technology is a really interesting subject. And I think technology, at the end of the day, is a tool. How we use it is what determines whether it's ultimately makes us better off or worse off. One of my concerns about social technology in particular is that far too many people have been using technology to substitute online connections for offline connections, but they are not equivalent. You know, I can have 5,000 followers on Twitter and 5,000 friends on Facebook, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I have people in my life who see me clearly for who I am, who I can confide in, who I can share secrets with, and who I can process my life with. So that's important that we recognize that there is a difference between online and offline relationships. But modern communication also allows less and less room for human expression in some ways. When we choose, for example, to text instead of calling, we don't hear the human voice. When we choose to write an email instead of walking down the hall to have an in-person conversation, we lose an opportunity to have a human experience. Now, there is a place for texting and for emailing. It improves efficiency in some contexts. I use both tools all the time. But we have to recognize the price that we pay, and we have to ask ourselves, has the balance shifted too much toward an impersonalization in terms of how we conduct our lives and do business? And in my estimation, the balance has swung too far to the extreme. I think we need to focus more on building those in-person connections with people, which ultimately can help to address loneliness.
One of the things that I've read about and seen people theorize about is how in the use of social media, we make our lives look fantastic. You know, we post happy pictures. We post pictures of us interacting with friends. And then when we look at other people's pictures, we see their apparently perfect lives, and there's this sense that we're being left out, or maybe it can enhance this feeling of loneliness. What do you think about that?
Well, there's been some interesting research done on when social media actually helps us feel more versus less lonely. And this is relevant to the example that you just brought up. And it turns out that when we use social media as a way station, then it can be helpful in reducing loneliness versus when we use it as a destination. So what would an example of that be? Well, if I am going to Iowa City and I happen to use my social media platforms to look and see which of my friends live in Iowa City so that I can meet up with them and we can enjoy some face-to-face interaction, then that's using social media as a way station, and in that case, it can actually help to reduce loneliness. However, when I use it as a destination, if I'm feeling lonely on a Friday night and I decide to stay in and look at my social media feeds to feel connected to people because I'm reading about their lives, then I actually end up often feeling more lonely because I'm looking at idealized versions of people's lives, often feeling even worse about my own life. And it's not actually creating the sense of deep connection that you get when you have an in-person conversation or speak to somebody on the phone.
We're talking about loneliness this hour. With me, former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy and Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. We'd also love to hear from you. What are your experiences with loneliness? Is this something that you struggle with? Why do you think it's an issue? What do you think can be done to combat it? We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100. Your questions as well, of course. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Daniel, as we see these numbers rise, as we see more people struggle with loneliness, I know as a researcher, sometimes it's difficult to theorize about where that might be coming from. But what are your thoughts? Why do you think this seems to be an increasing problem?
Well, one possibility, as was just mentioned, is that people's expectations regarding their relationships with others are in part determined by social comparison processes. So if they see others on social media, talking about and posting pictures regarding their relationships, that may, lead someone to raise their expectations and be less satisfied with their own relationships. And in turn, that can increase feelings of loneliness. So that may be part of the process that's going on, that these idealized pictures of relationships may be influencing people's expectations. And thus, expectations regarding the number of friends you have on Facebook and the nature of your relationships may have you to evaluate your own relationships more negatively.
Do you also feel with the older generation, as baby boomers move up into those older categories, is there a generational difference as well with maybe a willingness to admit loneliness or even to talk about one's feelings?
Well, I that may be part of what's going on. In the mid-80s, we did a study in Linn County and did a survey and gathered data on loneliness among individuals over 65 years of age at that time, and the levels of loneliness based on our measure, were quite low. And now, in this recent survey done by the AARP, the average levels of loneliness were quite a bit higher. And so part of that may have been a generational effect, and that, yes, the baby boomers, like myself, who are turning older, may be more willing to admit to feelings related to loneliness than earlier generations.
We're also at a time of year that sometimes makes us at least realize or think more about how we might be feeling lonely. Are the holidays a particularly dangerous and difficult time for people when it comes to isolation and loneliness?
Well, I would certainly think so. And for one thing, times like Thanksgiving lead you to think about individuals who have died, think about past relationships, and in turn, those feelings, and again, that's another factor that influences your expectations. And if your relationships have changed over time, this time of year may lead you to feel higher levels of loneliness.
We're going to talk more about possible solutions, ways to push back, ways to connect as the hour goes on. We have a number of people who want to join this conversation. Rachel is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
My comment was that I know I deal with issues of loneliness every now and then. I mean, I'm a truck driver. I spend, way too much time just me and my dog. But also, we're taught, like, from a young age that, you know, you're expected to, you know, once you graduate from high school or graduate from college, you know, the expectation is that you start a family. You go out, you get married, and you start having kids, you know, and if something, and if for whatever reason you don't, something's wrong with you. Well, what's wrong with you? You know, I mean, and if you, for whatever reason, you choose not to have a significant other, you know, one by one, you watch your friends get married and have kids, and, you know, after a while, you're the only one that, you know, has to bring a date because you're the only one who isn't paired up with somebody. Well, what's wrong with you? Something must be wrong with you. Is there something wrong with me? Why aren't I paired up with somebody? Everybody else is.
So even though you feel like it's a choice that you've made, the cultural expectations make you question yourself?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, even if it's not a choice that you've made, you know, sometimes, right. you know, you might be just, you know, like me personally, you might be extra picky. So, you're not willing to jump at the first person who, you know, seems to have an interest in you or, you know, just for whatever reasons you seem to manage to stay by yourself. So, after a while, sometimes, you know, people look at you like, well, there must be something wrong with you if you've never been paired up. You know, you're how old and you've never been married and you don't have kids. And what's wrong with you? You know, well, is there something wrong with me? I don't know.
Well.
But, you know, that expectation, you know, is there, you know, as a little girl, you're told that, you know, someday your prince will come, right? You know, everybody's supposed to have a happy ever after, right? So, you know, I mean, I think that kind of adds to people's feelings of loneliness.
Yeah, definitely. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing. I know you're not alone in feeling that way. And Dr. Murthy, can you respond to what Rachel was saying about these cultural expectations that we have, this idea of how we think our lives should go?
Absolutely. Rachel, first of all, thank you so much for calling in, for sharing your story, for admitting that you are lonely. That takes bravery, because we know that many people are ashamed to admit that. Even though there's nothing wrong with being lonely, many people experience it. I want to say one thing very clearly from the beginning. There is nothing wrong with you because you are not married. I want to say that 1,000 times. But I say this as somebody who got married very late in life and who for many years had people, you know, in my extended family and my friends community who wondered if there was something wrong with me because I wasn't married yet. You know, but all of us are on our own journey. For some of us, that includes marriage. For some, it might be sooner rather than later. But you don't need to be married in order to have adequate social connections in your life. Not being married doesn't automatically mean that you are consigned to a life of loneliness. In fact, part of the challenge is just what you said, Rachel, is that we grow up with a certain set of cultural values. And some of them are, as you mentioned, this notion that everyone should grow up and get married and start a family, and that's the right path for everyone. But we also are brought up in a culture that emphasizes individualism, that says that this country was built on individual effort, and if you are feeling lonely, then that's something that you've got to deal with. But the more you understand about the impact of loneliness on health, the more I hear stories about people's loneliness, the more I look at the science and the data, it is hard to escape the conclusion that we fundamentally need each other. As much as we may prize our individualism, we are truly interdependent creatures. So, you know, I just want to emphasize again, there's nothing wrong with you because you are not married. I recognize that you are feeling lonely, and I am truly, I feel for you because I know what that feels like. I have felt that in my life, and I still from time to time feel lonely as well. But, you know, that is not an inevitable consequence, you know, of not being married for you. So I just wanted to be clear that there is nothing wrong with you. And I certainly hope that you'll take that to heart and that you won't feel that not being married means that that you've done something wrong.
Well, and I want to bring up something else that Rachel said. She's a truck driver. That's a career where she spends a lot of time alone. And whether you drive a truck or whether you telecommute or, you know, do something else, there are a lot more people who are working alone as well. You feel that's a big part of this, what you call an epidemic as well, right, Dr. Murthy?
I do. You know, one of the real challenges in the workplace is that more and more people are working alone. So we have more people, for example, who are able to start businesses out of their homes, which is wonderful in so many respects. But one of the side effects is that they find they're not interacting a whole lot with other people. We also have more people who are telecommuting, which can mean, again, more time, more flexible time and time that you could spend with your family. But for some folks, that telecommuting also means that they're interacting with colleagues less and have less time to build a relationship. So there are certain occupational hazards to working alone, and loneliness can be one of them. Now, does that mean that there's nothing we can do about it? No.
And let's talk about what we can do about it after this break. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy and Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. We're talking about loneliness this hour. This is Talk of Iowa.
Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about loneliness and what it means to be lonely, why so many people seem to be at risk of loneliness right now, what it costs us. And we're also going to focus now on ways to combat loneliness. You're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University, and former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. And Dr. Murthy, I had to cut you off there just before the break. We were starting to talk about the work environment and how working alone is something that more people are doing these days and how that can lead to loneliness. But you've also written a great deal about how our work environments, even when we're together, have changed and how people feel isolated within a workplace as well. Why do you think that's a problem?
Well, it's become a problem because for multiple reasons. One, because when people are feeling lonely at work, when they're disconnected, they're also disengaged and their productivity is lower. When they're feeling lonely at work, that also often means that they're in a higher stress state because social connection is a powerful way at reducing a method of reducing our stress. And under chronic stress, we know that people's not only their productivity, but also their creativity and ability to be innovative is also impacted. So if you are a employer or if you are an employee, you should care about loneliness because it affects productivity, retention, and creativity of employees. But there are things that we can do to help.
Well, and I would love for you to describe for us what you did in the Surgeon General's office to bring your employees together and to create a sense of social connection. What did you do?
Well, this is a really interesting experience for us. You know, one of the strategies that you can take in the workplace to address loneliness is to create opportunities for colleagues to learn about who each other really is beyond their identities at work. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means not just to understand what someone's job function is, or that they're good at quantitative analysis or that they're good at logistics. It means understanding their values, aspirations, and inspirations, what their experiences are as parents, as kids, as concerned citizens, as people with interests and hobbies. People want to be valued and appreciated and understood as whole people. So when I was in the office of the Surgeon General, we began to realize that even though we had a dedicated team of people who had come together to support the mission, that the connections between people weren't as strong as they could be. And we recognized that that was having an impact on our work. So we did a very simple thing, which was we took 5 minutes during our weekly all-hands meeting, and we created something that allowed people to be able to get to know each other better. We called it our inside scoop. We would give 5 minutes to each person, what would be one person a week for the meeting, and they would have the chance to show pictures to the rest of the group that told the rest of the group something about their lives. It could be about their family, about their prior life experiences. And through those pictures, they were able to tell us more about who they were, what inspired them, what excited them, what worried them. And as simple as that exercise was, it became the most popular part of the week for many people. I saw people's engagement increase. They felt a stronger connection to each other and as a result to the office. People started moving outside of their work lanes and helping out in areas that were outside of their job description because, again, they felt a sense of allegiance and connection to each other and to the mission.
And it's interesting. I can think of several times in my career when I've been admonished for having a personal conversation within a meeting. We need to focus. We need to get through this. We need to be productive. So it kind of feels counter to our workplace culture and this idea of productivity. But you're saying that it actually helps with productivity in the long run.
It does. In the same way that our productivity is worsened when we experience more physical illness, it's true as well that when our emotional health is compromised, and I believe loneliness is one example of that, that it also has an impact on how present and productive we can be at work. Does that mean that we have to spend all of our time at work socializing with each other? No, that's not necessary. But what it does mean is that we should invest as employers, as businesses, as employees, in creating environments where people can cultivate authentic, deep relationships. And that word authentic, it's really important. You know, very often businesses, when they recognize that there's a morale issue, the quick solution is to say, well, let's just have more happy hours and get people together. And that can sometimes work, but very often what ends up happening is you get people together, they talk about what they have most in common, which it turns out is work, and that's time away from the work, and they often have to go back and finish it up later, or it's time away from family. What matters is the quality of the time together, whether it really gives people a chance to understand each other for who they really are beyond their roles at work.
And Daniel, I'd love to hear from you on this subject as well, because I know that you have looked at our workplace environment, our connection with colleagues, as an important key in the question of loneliness as well.
Yes, we did several studies with individuals working in different occupations. One study was of public school teachers in Iowa, a study of nurses, and a study of counseling psychologists looking at social support, both in general and from different types of individuals in their social network. And what we found in terms of loneliness was that how supportive you felt your coworkers were was the best predictor of loneliness. We also found, in terms of coping with stressful aspects of their job, that the supportiveness of their supervisor was the individual that was most important. So clearly, you know, working in an environment where you feel that you have positive relationships with your supervisor and coworkers is important both for loneliness and for coping with stressful aspects of the job.
And that's something that, and it's in the best interest of an organization to foster that kind of environment, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. And again, particularly with those kinds of stressful occupations.
I want to get to the phones. We have a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Rod is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Rod.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I think, you know, talk about loneliness. About 10 years ago, I lost a best friend to cancer, and I didn't realize how important that male relationship was between the two of us, and I've been quite lonely since then, and it's hard to find another good male buddy.
Oh, Rod, I'm so sorry for your loss. And Dr. Murthy, do you want to respond to that? I mean, these close friendships that we develop, losing one can be an incredible blow.
Absolutely. Rod, I'm terribly sorry about the loss of your friend, and I appreciate what you're saying about how that has had an impact on your feelings of loneliness. You know, I think loneliness among men is really underappreciated. And, you know, it's really interesting to think about it. I was just with a group of guy friends. You know, we had all gotten together because it was one of our birthdays, and we were celebrating together, which is something we actually rarely do. But in sitting together, we began talking about our lives and realized that since we got married, since we had kids, that we've become, in some ways, more disconnected from good friends. Some of that has been because, you know, geographic distance has grown. In some cases, we have actually lost friends to illness as well. But men tend to traditionally not to be as, if I should say, good as women are at maintaining social relationships and connections. And so, in some ways, that places some of us more at risk for loneliness when we leave established communities like a college or a densely populated workplace. So I hear what you're saying, Rod, and I'm so sorry about the loss of your friend. I think what you're pointing to, though, is a very real phenomenon that a lot of men are experiencing and that a lot of men don't like to talk about. And that's why I find what you just did now really powerful, because you've given voice to something that many men are experiencing but are often too ashamed or too scared to speak of, even though many of us are experiencing it.
So what do you think a man like Rod or any man can do about that? I think about my life, and women do create these social networks, whether they're virtual or in real life. We connect as mothers. We tend to be very proactive, a lot of us very proactive about creating a circle that we can be a part of. And I don't see that as much with men. What do you think Rod can do?
So I think there are a few things that Rod can do, that I can do, that all of us as men can do. Number one, we can just ask ourselves a simple question more regularly, you know, as I try to do at least once a week. Where in our week have we spent time with people that where we felt good about that time, where we were building an authentic connection? Second, we can actually reach out and help each other. And even though this is counterintuitive, extending help actually creates a mutually reaffirming experience and often helps people feel less lonely. The third thing we can do is carve out time to be with people without our phones. Now, our phones too often distract us from being fully present in conversation. I'm certainly have been guilty of this from time to time. But without being present, we can't listen well and build these strong relationships that we need to build. But overall, I think we have to just recognize that if we are lonely, we're not the only ones. There are many people who are experiencing loneliness, many people who want either someone to reach out or were trying to reach out themselves and build that connection. And if you're not lonely and you're listening to this radio segment, just recognize that there are likely people around you who are, and you can help by building bridges with them.
Let's go back to the phones. Ralph is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Ralph. Oh, we seem to have lost Ralph, but Maureen is here with us from Des Moines. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Want to talk about my daughter. It's ironic that this is the segment today. She's back from college, and she's 21, always had loved being around friends, having friends, but she's always the one that's given the advice, and she says, "Oh, my friends, nobody asked me ever about me." I said, "Well, we are in that era of it's a me generation." So she's sitting there, and she said last night, "Mom, I am lonely."
That must have been so
hard
to hear.
And I didn't know what
to
do. Yeah.
So,
and I didn't know what, I didn't want to just say, just get over it. I said, well, we need to look into this. Because all of her friends, she gives all the advice. She's the shrink, I call her. I said, well, you have us, but, you know, that's not good enough. The parents aren't always, but we've got a great family, great brother, just not enough for her.
Oh, Maureen, I'm sure that was so difficult for you to hear. And Dr. Murthy, what can you say? And we were talking earlier about the isolation of so many people in that age group, in high school, in college. What can Maureen do or suggest to her daughter that might help?
Well, Maureen, my heart just broke when I was listening to you. I can't imagine how you felt when you realized how much pain your daughter was in when she said that she was lonely. And it reminded me of a conversation I just had with my wife, and we were talking about what we wanted for our 14-month-old when he grows up and enters into the world. And, you know, I said one of the things I want is I want him to feel connected to other people. I want him to feel like he belongs. I want him to feel affirmed by the world and not shunned and not lonely. And if he felt lonely, I know how it would break my heart, and my heart really goes out to you. You know, I think, first of all, I think it's really, really positive that you're daughter came to you and admitted this, because there are so many students that I have met who feel lonely but don't feel comfortable telling their parents. I was one of those students years ago. Second, I think it's great that you have listened and that you didn't tell her just to suck it up or deal with it or get on with it or not worry about it, because I think you recognize probably intuitively that this is an important issue that needs to be addressed. And I think if she feels that you're somebody she can talk to about this, that's already a powerful force that she has in her favor for addressing this. The third is, somebody once gave me the advice before I had kids. They said, your kids will listen not to what you say, but to what you do. And I've tried to keep that in mind. But I know that the example that, Maureen, that you said as a parent, will also have a powerful effect on her. She looks at the relationships that you have in your life and how you cultivate friendships and where you invest time with friends and how you prioritize friends. That will also, I think, be beneficial for her to see. And then finally, I think your conversations with her, helping her understand what she's looking for in a relationship, I think could also be very helpful. You know, it's tough being in college. It's tough growing up in 2017 where everything in social media and in the traditional media is telling you what to think about, what to care about, and what construes value. But if she is feeling like nobody is asking her about who she is and asking her deeper questions, your conversations with her about that, delving more deeply into what it is that she's looking for, what would make her feel valued and good about a friendship, will help her as she's negotiating relationships in college and then in years to come. It'll help her understand what she should be looking out for. And when she finds that in somebody, you know, find somebody who reciprocates, you know, her outreach, who feels the same interest in getting to know her as she does in getting to know them, then that will click because of the conversations she's had with you as well. But I applaud you for being there as a parent, recognizing this is an important issue and being there for your daughter to help address it. This is very important.
Maureen, thank you so much for your call. We have so many others who would love to join this conversation who struggle with loneliness, and we only have a couple of minutes left. So I would love for each of you, Daniel, for the people out there who are struggling with loneliness, you've made a lifetime study of loneliness. What would you say to someone who struggles with loneliness to help them understand and maybe help them cope?
I think that, you know, one of the major things to think about is, you know, in terms of what their relationships have been, you know, what particular types of things is it that they like to do? Seeking out others with similar interests is one way to develop relationships. You know, in terms of interventions for loneliness, now what people are turning to are interventions that focus on cognitive processes, so how one thinks about your relationships with others and your expectations regarding relationships with others appears to be key. But again, getting involved for older adults, getting involved in volunteer groups and other, you know, thinking of other ways in which you can have contact with others that share your interests is one strategy. You know, unfortunately, a lot of interventions for loneliness have not worked well. And current research, again, is really focusing on methods such as what are labeled mindfulness interventions, focusing on meditation, again, particularly meditation regarding your interpersonal relationships. You know, so those are techniques, you know, in terms of trying to cope with loneliness that may be successful.
Well, Daniel Russell, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Daniel Russell, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. And we are out of time, but Dr. Vivek Murthy, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really great to be with you today.
Former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy. We've been talking about loneliness this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.